We're back in the Zurich, Switzerland home of Gorelila Dasa. His civil name, street name, is Guido von Arx. And one thing that we have discussed somewhere else is the question of dharma, or in other words, the purpose of life. What is it all about? And in the other interview with Gorelila, we heard that there are two basic types of dharma, one being the spiritual. Who am I, the spiritual self, the soul? And the other one being a kind of secular or material or professional or career kind of dharma. What do I do best in this world? This is the two, roughly speaking, the two basic kinds of dharma as we'll be dealing with them. Gorelila, as we mentioned also in the other interview about dharma, is a dharma counselor. And he has been doing Dharma counseling for a number of years now. Maybe this, to start it off, is part of your Dharma, to be a Dharma counselor. How did you get the inspiration to do this?
It was actually an accident.
There are no accidents and no coincidences, right?
There was a friend of mine who had that big problem. Didn't know what he should do in life, just had no ideas. And kind of out of kindness, I shared a few thoughts. You know, like just out of the blue, made a few remarks and gave a few tips, so to say, advices, and then just kind of, wow, dropped his mouth and said, hey, what do you know? It's just far out. I mean, it's incredible. How do you know all that? I should talk with you. I said, well, sorry, I have no education in that. I'm not professional. But he insisted. I said, okay, give me a couple of weeks' time. I think about it and I'll check the situation. And I talked with a few people who do that professionally. I also studied a couple of books which talk on those lines. And then I thought, let's give it a try. So I did that and it went quite well. So it kind of happened. I met a few other people with similar problems and I said, well, we can try. I made my list of questions I should ask. I have my kind of guidelines. But
sort of an elaborate questionnaire, isn't it? I guess we could say.
I would call it like that. But maybe the most important thing is that I try to put myself in tune of the, if I might call it in a very impersonal way, the universe or in a divine consciousness. So I'm an instrument. And it often happened that I was myself very surprised and the person I was counseling to as well, what kind of perfect questions I was able to ask and also that the conclusion, the answer, was just the right answer the person was looking for. It was an experience which I would call was really touching, and I was often really felt overwhelmed how I was able to be an instrument of the divine to be able to help that person.
It reminds me a little bit of what the spiritualists say. The mediums, they tune into the spirit world. Well, you're not tuning into the spirit world, but it sounds very much like you're tuning in, if you like, to the spirit or the soul of the person you're trying to help. It seems similar somehow.
I try to tune in that I can be an instrument of maybe angels or divine personalities or Lord Krishna, whoever is able or wants or desires to help me, that I become, so to say, the mouthpiece, asking the right questions and helping the person. So it's an experience we have both together, that we have been instruments.
This is very important because you're not reading the mind of the person you're helping, so to speak. You are actually, you're getting this from the universe, from God.
Yeah, but at the same time, I try to be sensitive to and feel the person. That's also why I ask so many questions, to really get a picture. It's an approach on different levels. You can say from the logical perspective, from my mind, getting information, knowledge. Then, of course, feeling the person from my heart. And at the same time, also trying to get the information, inspiration from above.
Are you also a bit of a psychologist in the sense that you watch the body language of the individual when you're talking to them? If they react in a certain way or have a certain expression, that this maybe confirms what you're feeling? It seems like an intricate kind of communication there.
Certainly not consciously, because I didn't study psychology and I could never claim that I'm a psychologist. But there are, even in a subconscious way, many languages which people speak, not just the verbal phonetic one, but also through the body. And there is one saying which, of course, may not be entirely true for someone who's really trained, but they say the body language never lies. But I, as I said, I'm trying very much to feel the person and make an extra endeavor, not just through the words the person speaks. There is also another element coming from communications that more important than what you say is what you don't say. Mm-hmm. And you try to feel all those elements between the lines, so to say. Because the better you feel the person, the more you can also help the person, or at least try to help the person to find his or her actual dharma.
Some very spiritually based, focused psychotherapists and analysts use similar terms, that they create a kind of spiritual bond with the client, with the patient, whichever. It sounds very similar. You have to really feel that individual, connect to their spirit, so to speak, get inside them.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it that I connect to their spirit, but as I said, I really try to be sensitive to get an understanding of that person on all levels, or at least on as many levels as possible.
But again, the main input for the information that you receive, you feel, the results you get, don't come from the individual. They come primarily from, let's call it, the universe.
It's a combination. As I said, I use logic, I use common sense, I use mental or intellectual elements, but I use the heart and I use also the Lord's help.
Is it important, now let's restrict our discussion for this moment anyway, to the so-called career dharma or the professional dharma, the thing that we think of probably the most. How can I make a living in the world? Aptitude. Would you go so far as to say that there is a relationship between this kind of dharma counseling and what we could call career counseling? Is it essentially the same thing?
Personally, I don't like the word career dharma or counseling. Career always means you have to get at the top of something. Mm. Maybe I have a misunderstanding of that word. But just call it the physical dharma or the present dharma, which you have to take
care
of.
We're not talking
right
about
now.
An aggressive fight for the top.
That's not the idea. Now, I didn't get the question because of that.
The issue is there a relationship in that sense, call it the secular, or the career, or the professional, and what others call career counseling? Are there common elements there?
Yeah, but my approach, also that's why I use that Sanskrit word dharma, which is not just the physical or professional dharma involved, is that element is there as well, and depends a little bit on the person. I had people with me who we just had to talk, so to say, the physical, social elements, really the more gross elements, because their spiritual or metaphysical element was rather clear. In some cases was just the opposite, because they were rather clear with the worldly elements, but they weren't really aware of, for a complete satisfaction, for the right job, they need to include those elements as well. So I had to more emphasize on the metaphysical, spiritual elements. But generally, it's a combination of both. So I apply those techniques as well, which give people a better understanding of their, you can say, sensual, physical, and mental abilities, including also the emotional sides. But I just don't want to stay there. As we call it here, it's not just ein heiteres Berufsberaten, where we talk about jobs, but
it's
really
not a
try
game.
To make.
No.
It's a serious undertaking, but it should be as holistically as possible.
To what extent do you depend on the feelings of the individual in getting answers? How they themselves feel, how they see themselves, again in the professional sense, if we restrict ourselves to that discussion for the moment?
For me, it's similar to a massage. The more the person is open and relaxed and feels safe in that company, the better you can achieve the goal. The energies can flow, or then the truth can manifest. If the person, that of course you always have to respect, for some reason doesn't feel confident to open completely, it's a very intimate subject matter, this dharma counseling. I really have to go in the core, into the heart of the person. Which understand when everyone feels to open all those inner thoughts and desires and inclinations. But unless that's done, it remains on a superficial level, and that's not where I feel comfortable to help the person. The main element is, of course, the active participation of the person. And the real objective as much as possible and open, emotional presentation of their desires in order to get to the core of the person, to find out what's their actual dharma. Because there it's clear if the person, him or herself, is able to go to the bottom of the heart, so to say. They don't need any dharma counsel, don't need anyone in that sense. But that's often difficult because those many layers of different expectations and desires which we have cover our, you know, heart, so to say, our soul, our inner self.
Does it happen often, or sometimes anyway, that someone has a pretty good idea of their inner feelings, their own sense of dharma, and what they're really looking for or need is a confirmation from you? Does this happen?
That happened a couple of times. It was also nice. The person maybe at one particular time in their life had that big question. And then maybe 2 weeks later we were able to meet, or a month later. But by then, because the process of thinking and looking for it continued, then they just needed a confirmation, and that Dharma counseling gave the confirmation, which wasn't, you know, something totally entirely new then, but it was nice for both sides to hear that what they felt and what they're actually doing is the right thing. And other elements which sometimes pop into the mind are not that, you know, relevant, at least not in a longer term.
Again, from the external or professional Dharma point of view, what are some typical questions that you ask?
Wouldn't call typical questions, because first I go into a little bit of a meditation and have some concepts in mind. But some of the questions are, for instance, when you remember yourself when you were very young, what were your first desires? What would you become when you're older, or when you're a grown up, you're an adult? That's one element. Sometimes you feel you should really start at the childhood. There are other questions like, what if you have all the money in the world and you wouldn't have to worry anymore for a financial income? What would you do? The general answers then are traveling and reading and do all the nice things I always want to do. Then I always have to go a little bit deeper and ask them, well, that's nice for sometimes, but maybe you have something else you'd like to do or offer to the world. There are other questions to little bit study their life sequence. When they had the first desire, why didn't they keep it? What were other ideas which came up in due course? What did the teacher say? What did the parents say? Etc. And the main element for me generally is, what do you think are your unique skills and talents, where you have certainly strength, where you think you have specially skilled? And sometimes even ask them to write them all down. Sometimes they're a little bit hesitant in the beginning, saying, no, I don't have any particular skill. And you really have to insist on that, and then suddenly there's a whole universe popping up, so to say, with wonderful elements and skills and talents these people have. And then the combination, which I must say Deepak Chopra expressed so nicely in his books, that if these unique skills can be combined with the desire of society, then you can create affluence. Because if you have something you're very good at, but no one needs it, no one desires it, of course you can't make a living out of it. But if that's a desire of society as well, and the need of society, then you can really create what is called this affluence. Then you don't have to worry about the financial maintenance.
Well, we're getting into a complicated area of what is ethical and what is spiritual and not spiritual here, which brings up automatically, it begs the question, we now turn to discovering one's spiritual or internal dharma. How does the approach to learning that differ from checking the external or the professional dharma?
The internal dharma and the spiritual dharma are two different things, as the external and the internal is again different. The internal dharma are certain qualities you have to develop. In some cases, a person may be very impatient. So the internal dharma is to learn patience, or you have to be more tolerant because you're very maybe narrow-minded or egoistic. You just see the world through your own eyes. You can't really have empathy for other people. So these are the more subtle elements of dharma you have to learn. The problem is, even if you're externally well-situated, you still, and you don't actually understood and follow your internal dharma, you're not satisfied. And of course, vice versa. Some people know a little bit where they have to work on, which are certain weaknesses they have in the character, in their, you know, internal emotional side. And if one of the two are not rightly situated, then it's difficult. So ideally, you're aware of both and you can work on both. And the third dharma, which you meant the spiritual dharma, is beyond both the physical or the, you know, professional and the internal dharma. This is just what you do eternally. And this is the loving devotion to the Lord, mm-hmm. which, of course, if you can do your physical dharma with love and devotion for society,
then you're really in balance.
Then you're ideally situated. Mm-hmm. And you also have, not in a narcissistic perspective, love for yourself in the sense of respect. I'm a soul like everyone else, and I should respect and love that soul as well without overestimating your qualities, or also not the opposite, thinking you're just a loser or a nobody. Mm-hmm. That proper balance comes with love, but love is the most difficult thing because that comes generally at the end. First you have to know and experience, and then you can love a person.
Well, to get back to the two key terms now, the internal and external, is it fair enough to give this analogy or equate it to, again, career counseling, where the career counselor will ask some questions to try to, or maybe perform tests, to find out the, quote, natural talent of an individual, and then look how well this matches the aspirations or desires of this individual. In other words, if someone dreams of being a great surgeon, or just a surgeon, a brain surgeon or something, and has what we say two left thumbs, I mean, just doesn't have the dexterity, obviously that's not going to work. So there has to be a realistic matching of talent versus desire. And this is where you can be very helpful.
It's not just a desire. I said the desire might often be perverted, mm-hmm. or not clean or pure, so to say, with false expectations and false identifications. It's mm-hmm. also, it's the element which you used as well, is the natural way of doing it. Things which you like to do and you can see you can do it almost effortlessly. Doesn't mean you don't have to work. Even great, great musicians have to work hard.
But they have a talent.
They have a talent.
Yeah.
So for them, it's of course easier than someone who has two left thumbs, so to say. But that should be there. You feel natural. You feel in your element when you do it. And people also react positively. Someone who is rhetorically or as a public speaker, skilled and talented, people like to hear him. He can be a master of ceremony. He can be on stage. He can, you know, guide people through a certain conversation, all that stuff. That's natural. So it's both. You should check with people who honestly can give you feedback. Mm-hmm. Say, yes, when I see you doing that, I feel, wow, this person is really in his or her element. And you feel it yourself because it's kind of natural.
Well, even without the help of a counselor like yourself, I mean, we can go pretty far ourselves. Do we feel that this comes naturally to us? Do we enjoy doing it? Does it, of course, ideally serve a good social purpose, for example? These are good signs that you're moving in the right direction and that you have a balance or a compatibility between the talent and the desire or wish, whatever you want to call it. These are natural things we can know ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So I call it always, there's an internal answer. Yourself, you feel, wow, it's really going nice and I like doing it and I feel very natural doing it. And you also get an external mm-hmm. positive reply. People say, wow, I really felt you do that great. And you just see that it's not just cheap kind of flattering or, you know, just trying to buy you, but it's honestly.
And you can confirm this to people who just would like that confirmation. But I guess it's harder to help people who, let's say hypothetically, maybe not so hypothetically, it's very common, I guess, had a very severe or strict upbringing, never learned how to make their own decisions, or not familiar with dealing with choices and this sort of thing, were always told all their lives what they had to do. This must be very difficult to get the confidence and trust of these people.
I had one person where I really concluded what he now requires is professional psychological help. I could feel that the weakness with finding a profession is kind of out of the way at the moment, because first he has to find himself. He has to develop proper self-respect, and he has been wounded, so to say, in his childhood by improper education, by his parents and all that.
So these are the perversions that you're talking about.
So that was obvious. There's no question right now to discuss his profession. He has to be first rightly situated with himself, mm-hmm. and then you can, you know, approach that question.
What is Dharma counseling based on, if we're speaking now in the sense of Vedic science and knowledge and Vedic technology, what elements of Vedic wisdom are in play here?
That everyone has a nature, and you can't change that nature. Vedic social discussion is, of course, a bit complicated to get into it right now. It's the Varnashram, which means that every person has a particular nature. According to that nature, one acts. It's natural for some people to be more intellectual people or more guides or leaders or people who have skills in working or artistic elements or all these elements, or those are just business people. That's kind of natural. So to discover that and, of course, fulfilled that element, that's Vedic. That's one aspect. The other element from the Vedic side is also the emotional, the metaphysical and the spiritual side. That's why I use that word dharma, because it should include everything, not just your physical skills, so to say. Because I often had people who were physically or professionally rightly situated still unhappy because their internal and maybe also the spiritual dharma haven't been addressed.
Mm-hmm. Is it also important to have an element of spirituality in the end product of what we do? Let me give a very direct and perhaps crass example. Let's say you're a metal worker and have a lot of talent for fashioning metal. Are you really going to be making the universe and God happy by using that talent to create hand grenades and artillery shells?
No, of course not. But there are many other ways you can use your skills without creating weapons. You can be something decorative to make people happy. You can use it for a church or for a temple. Or maybe you can't do it directly for something spiritual. Then the question comes up, what is your consciousness behind? And what do you do when you're not doing metal work? Maybe you do your own meditations, your prayers, your yoga practices. You do other kind of social work for helping people or spiritual devotional activities. But certain elements, of course, which are directly opposite to any spiritual understanding, like creating weapon and all that stuff, then it's tough. But these people can find another job. It's not just that someone who's skilled with, you know, iron work or whatever, metal work, he can only work in the weapon factory.
This is very important. In fact, it's key what you're saying. In God's eyes, not everything that we do has to be practical. It doesn't have to achieve something. It can be just be an act of beauty, or trying to express natural beauty, or try to bring happiness to someone. This is all worthy. This is all good kind of activities. And this is part of good dharma, in the sense that this is what you should be doing. If you feel the impulse to help through art, to create or be a gardener or something like this, this is all worthy. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's certainly not spiritual, but it is at least good on a mundane level, and better good on a mundane level than something pseudo-spiritual. Spiritual means what actually delivers you, frees you from any material attachments, mm-hmm. and what brings you closer to yeah. God. That's spiritual.
You're touching on something extremely important, Gauralila, and again, there's no point mentioning names, but there are events all around today, the so-called New Age, I would cynically call it a New Age industry. Everybody has got some kind of an ism. Someone has a new way of thinking, or has discovered something sincere or insincere. A lot of these people are around. How can we know if a Dharma counselor, or what we also hear today, a life counselor, seemingly well-meaning people, are really competent to help us in this way?
Phalena parijate, or in the words of the Bible, you would call it judged by the result.
Mm-hmm.
If the person who does that job does it honestly, he can also see whether he's achieving something, he has some success in that field, and also the people he's counseling have that positive effect that through his work or her work, things are developing in the right direction. The result is very important. The main thing is, when you do an activity, there is a result. The spiritual approach to it is not be attached to it. Mm-hmm. But it's unavoidable. Whenever you do, a result will come. So if you're even a pseudo-counselor and a so-called esoteric counselor, and you just have some wrong motivations and just try to bewilder people or get their money or whatever, get some respect from them, that won't ultimately, if you're honest, make you happy, nor will it bring anything to those people you're counseling with. So judge by the result and your motivation.
And we can also feel very often, get a sense for a person, whether they're sincere, whether they're spiritual or not. Some people you just, you know, you look at them and, okay, I admit it's a little judgmental, but you ask yourself, gee, would I really want to buy a used car from that guy? If you don't have a good feeling, then possibly you should follow those feelings and go elsewhere.
Possibly. You should sometimes also use your intellect and ask, why do I have those feelings? Is it just because someone else with a similar nose had a bad experience with and now just quickly jump to a conclusion, this must be a bad person too? Or is it based on some internal feeling? Give that person a chance to prove that he's actually or she's actually a good person.
And this can be done without getting too deeply involved, I imagine. Just having a chat, putting some pertinent questions.
You see, it depends. With some people, you have a business relationship. And then, of course, it's good if you get along well. With some people, you're a bit more closer. And then it's good to know more the internal side of the person. Depends. So many people you meet, you don't have anything to do with them. So you just can wish them in your heart, you know, good luck. And say bye-bye. And with some people you want to have a closer friendship with, want to be closer with, and in that sense, you develop a deeper understanding of the person, take time to understand the internal person, the inner thoughts, desires, and difficulties, problems, because that is also part of the person. If someone thinks he or she has no problems, then, you know, he or she is lying.
Mm. Or needs a lot of further development to become aware of the problems that they have, to come to the point they can admit it. Have you ever undergone Dharma counseling yourself, subjected yourself to it?
No, not directly. I never had the big question that, am I doing the right thing or not? I sometimes checked with people, you know, like something astrology or something like that, and it was all confirmed that I'm on the right path. Mm-hmm. But I haven't officially approached the Dharma Council and said, I have big question marks in my life, I don't know what I should do, because I felt rather comfortable in what I'm doing. Although it's sometimes not so easy to define, because I'm not doing karma counseling alone, I do a couple of other things, but that seems to be part of my Dharma. I'm not just, you know, limiting myself, of course, quotation mark, limiting myself to one aspect. I have several aspects, and that's fine for the time being.
It's perfectly conceivable that you might have a variety of activities which are all part of your Dharma and are complemented. Mm-hmm. It's not just one thing. It could be half a dozen or even more.
Some people get bewildered, as we say here, when you dance on two marriages simultaneously. Some other people get enriched and inspired. And I'm more one of those persons who needs different activities, and each one I feel is often complementary to the other. I use in my other activities, like as an English teacher, those who have an English mother tongue might laugh at this kind of guy with such an accent that wants to be an English teacher. However, it's of course not for the most advanced ones. I use a lot also of Dharma elements in there and communication elements in there, which is fine to you kind of intermingle the two or three elements.
So again, it gets down to, we have to be open, and there are surprises here too. We might find out that we hadn't thought of something that we might be inspired or talented to do, and be open-minded and be willing to try new things, not just the old, familiar comfort zones.
There's a nice saying, if you do what you have done so far, you will only get what you have received so far.
Or I've heard another one that he never asked much of life, and that's exactly what he got. And another one I heard of recently, if you're always following in someone else's footsteps, you never leave any of your own. Gauralila Dasa, Dharma Counselor in the city of Zurich, Switzerland. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It has been a pleasure.